It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and happy Friday. Steve, you made it through the week, so that is a good thing.
It seems like I've heard that before this week.
For those of you that might not have been listening yesterday, I had my days mixed up. We've been running pretty fast and hard over here, and I thought yesterday was Friday as well, but today is really Friday, so you guys all made it through the week. Congratulations.
Yes, happy Friday to you and our guest.
And our guest in studio with me is my very good friend, and that's Helen Raleigh. Helen, it's great to have you here.
Thank you guys for having me. Happy Friday.
You have been busy. You write for The Federalist, and you have two very important pieces out there that we're going to talk about in segments 3 and 4. But we are going to do something really fun on March 30th, our salon series on three punches to knock down democratic socialism. And you and Dr. Paul Prentice did this workshop at the Western Conservative Summit this last year, and it was standing room only.
Yes, totally exceeded our expectation.
And so we are excited about that. You can buy your tickets. You can go to my website. That's Kim Munson. That's MONSON.com. And I think that we're going to sell out. And so I would recommend that people go ahead and get their tickets early.
Right.
And the way that's going to work is the tickets are $20. There is a processing fee on top of that. And then it's over at Water's Edge Winery. And then you can purchase whatever you want to eat and drink. And Chef D over there, I'm sure, is going to have just some really great things to eat. And so it'll be 5 to 6, mix and mingle, 6 to 7. You and Dr. Prentice will make a presentation, and then there'll be discussion after that.
Right, and I highly recommend that if you're a wine connoisseur, to have fabulous wine selection. So you're going to get the body nutrition as well as a mind nurturing. So you'll be a wonderful evening.
It's going to be a great evening. So that's March 30th at Water's Edge Winery. And to buy your tickets, you can go to my website, kimmunson.com. So in this third and fourth segment, these two pieces that you have done in The Federalist, one is about the coronavirus, and the other is Bernie and Venezuela. So we'll chat about both those things.
Sounds great.
Okay. So let's go ahead and jump in here on all that we like to do as we look at these issues. We look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. We are seeing such a romance of this narrative of socialism. And socialism is built on really one of the seven deadly sins, that is envy. And nothing good ever comes out of that kind of stuff, Helen.
No, and as we can tell from Soviet Union to Venezuela.
Yeah, Venezuela, what was it, 30, 40 years ago, was a very prosperous country.
Venezuela was the richest country in Latin America, had the most vibrant, healthy, functioning democracy before socialism ruined it.
And now people don't have enough toilet paper, coffee. They're going across the border to try to get food. Yes. And so bad policy you can have all kinds of natural resources, and bad policy can actually, you know, really do bad things for regular people. It's just awful.
Right. Socialism has the capacity to ruin any kind of a wealth that a country or person had. It's really the worst socio-economical system in human history. It's socialism collectively responsible for over 100 million deaths in the last 100 years. So we should not welcome this kind of deadly ideology in our country.
And we're going to have a big battle of ideas as we move into this 2020 election. Yes. Regarding socialism or freedom. Mm-hmm. So freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Let's continue on here, though. We see with policy that down at the state capitol, they're continuing to move towards socialist policy. Steve, we talked about this yesterday. Communism, government owns everything. Socialism, government controls everything. So they're not that different. And we continue to see the socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, and healthcare. And you can see that down at the State House with all of these different bills that are coming forward.
And the lines between the two can be easily blurred. So
So that is why we do this show, so that you can get your brain around these issues and talk with your friends and your family and your colleagues about these important issues. Always like to say thank you to our great team, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for all of your support and good work. And to each of you listeners, I value you. You are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose today. Go out, take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body, and strive for excellence. So if Christy Whaley is listening out there today, our person of inspiration, and she had mentioned this to me. Have you guys ever heard of Madame C.J. Walker by any chance? Steve? Helen? Okay.
No.
What?
No.
Okay. Okay. Madame C.J. Walker invented a line of African-American hair products after suffering from a scalp that resulted in her own hair loss, a scalp ailment that resulted in her own hair loss. She promoted her products by traveling around the country, giving lecture demonstrations, and eventually established Madame C.J. Walker Laboratories to manufacture cosmetics and train sales beauticians. Her business acumen led her to become one of the first American women to become a self-made millionaire.
Wow.
She was also known for her philanthropic endeavors, including a donation toward the construction of the Indianapolis YMCA in 1913. She was born on December 23rd in 1867 on a cotton plantation near Delta, Louisiana. Her parents, Owen and Minerva, were recently freed slaves, and Sarah, who was her fifth child, was the first in her family to be freeborn. Minerva died in 1874, and Owen passed away the following year, both due to unknown causes, leaving Sarah an orphan at the age of seven. After her parents' passing, she went to live with her sister and her brother-in-law. She died in 1919. Is that not an amazing story?
That's amazing American story, success story.
And this is what she said. I had to make my own living and my own opportunity, but I made it. Don't sit down and wait for the opportunities to come. Get up and make them.
This is a great segue into your funny. I'm sorry, Helen.
Yeah.
It's a great segue into your funny. So.
Yeah, well, she is. I just thought that was so inspirational. So thank you to Christy Whaley for turning me on to Madame C.J. Walker. Okay, our funnies. Steve, are you ready?
I am.
What does Karl Marx, an unemployed student with a basket weaving degree and a $250,000 of college debt, Jeff Bezos, and you have in common?
Answer.
Everything, if Marx, Bernie Sanders, and Joe Biden have their way.
Good one.
Okay, our bill of the day, I'm a bit ambivalent. Patty and I talked about this yesterday, and it is it's Senate Bill 2123 down at the State House, and it is a bill that will actually allow compensation and representation of student athletes. And it says the bill states, except as may be required by an athletic association, conference, or other group or organization with authority over intercollegiate athletics, mm-hmm. including the National Collegiate Athletic Association, an institution of higher education shall not uphold any rule, requirement, standard, or other limitation that prevents a student athlete of the institution from earning compensation from the use of the student athlete's name, image, or likeness. A student athlete's earning of compensation may not affect the student's scholarship eligibility. An association shall neither prevent a student athlete from earning compensation nor prevent an institution from participating in the athletics because a student athlete receives compensation. I don't know. I'm a bit ambivalent on this. Do you have any thoughts on that, Helen?
Well, I probably need to study the bill further before I just comment on a specific bill. But I think generally in terms of concept, I believe in a capitalist society, people should get paid for their actual, work, for how much they contribute, the kind of wealth they generate. And we know the NCAA is a huge business machine. They can say everything about the higher education, this and that. But if you look at it, the way they run the March Madness, the tournament, they make a lot of money. They run it like a business,
mm-hmm.
okay? They don't run it like a nonprofit organization. So the students, yes, students, athletes, that they do get the scholarship, but the wealth they generate, the advertising revenues, are way more than the scholarship they earned. So just conceptually, I think the students, athletes should get paid for what their market worth. But in terms of specific bill, I'm going to have to refrain until I actually read the language in
okay.
the bill.
Yeah, and, I'm thinking about it, and I hear what you're saying. On the other hand, You know, if somebody wants to go pro, they can go pro, but it is a business. But I think when I'm looking at this big picture with what's going on with this legislature, everything else, they are always talking about taking away from people. So I still kind of need to think about it some more as well. But there's so much coming down the pike that I haven't really totally got my brain around this particular bill of the day. But I'm glad Patty brought it forward.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. You know, let's jump on over here. We have Lauren Levy on the line, and Lauren is a mortgage specialist. He has with Polygon, or his company is Polygon Financial. And Lauren, these interest rates are crazy with this coronavirus craziness in the market. But interest rates, I think I saw a headline this morning. It looks like they're going to drop them again. So what does that mean for the mortgage market?
Oh, it's just a crazy, crazy time right now, Kim. Good morning. I'm not sure, you know, when you say that they're going to drop them again, you know, it's a function of the market. So when I woke up today, and actually I was up late doing some work last night, and the 10-year U.S. Treasury was down to like 0.75.
It's wow.
Unprecedented. And that is the 10-year Treasury is loosely tied to mortgage rates. So to be honest, mortgage rates still aren't as low as they probably should be if they were truly tied to the 10-year Treasury. And I just think, honestly, banks, this is all moving so fast that banks can't keep up. They don't know how low to make them, and, you know, they don't want to lose money at the end of the day. And so I think they're just not lowering rates as fast to hope that these things kind of bounce back up a little bit. But having said that, we're doing loans for people that are at rates I never thought I'd see on, like, 30-year fixes. And, you know, most people are – I'm getting calls out of the blue. It's amazing. Everyone probably has to look at their mortgage and see if they can at least save money or knock years off their loan.
Well, and I think this is a really unique opportunity. And you know, as you look at things, when we talk to Jason McBride, you know, it's difficult to, you know, hit the very top or the very bottom. Same with interest rates, Lauren. It's very difficult to get the absolute lowest rate. But when you look at it historically, I mean, this could be a tremendous opportunity for people to lower their monthly payment. And so you and I have, you're on my website here, and if people call you, you're doing something special if they are a listener of the show, right?
That's right. If people go to my website or just call me at 303-880-8881, I am offering to cover the cost of the appraisal on their refinances if they're a listener of your show. So that'll lower their costs, you know, by about $625 on their loan.
So basically, for you to sit down and take a look at that, would there be any cost then for people to actually just, you know, kick the tires on this interest rate market right now?
No, not at all. I'll be glad to have a conversation with anybody and look at the numbers. And honestly, if it doesn't make sense, then I would just tell people that it doesn't make sense. They're in a good position. And it's possible that some people have just paid down their balance so well that they're just paying mostly principal at this point. And if that's the case, I'll just tell them to keep on doing what they're doing. But with the rates the way they are, it's, you know, most people are going to have an opportunity, I think, to help themselves. And to be truthful about it, you know, with the market doing what it's doing, a lot of people are losing money in their 401ks or in their market portfolios, hopefully not too bad. But this is a way to maybe save some money and make some money and get ahead and get a positive out of this market, you know, madness that's going on.
You know, that's the thing, is when things are crazy, there's always an opportunity. And here you are saying you'll take a look at things, you'll pay for their appraisal, and would certainly recommend that people give you a call at 303-880-8881. 303-880-8881. That's the correct number, isn't it, Lauren?
That is correct. And they can also, if they can't get me for any reason, just because the phone's been busy, they can go to www.polyfigroup.com, and they can click in through there and get to me that way through email, and I'll respond that way as well.
Okay.
So, either way works.
Well, fantastic, and so highly would recommend. And I know you're going to be working a lot over the next few days regarding these interest rates, but I'd highly recommend that people get in touch with you and kick the tires on it and see if they can save themselves some money and lock in a low rate at this particular opportunity in the market. So, Lauren Levy, the other thing, I just want to say thank you. You're one of my valued partners. And if you go to my website and look at sponsors in the drop-down menu, each and every one of those sponsors, I highly recommend, highly endorse. I know that you'll take good care of people. And so I love having you as my one of my sponsors, Lauren.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's been great to work with you. So thank you, Kim.
Okay. So again, what is that website one more time?
www.polyfigroup.com or 303-880-8881.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you next week, Lauren, because I know that people are going to be very interested in this. So thanks so much. Have a great day. I know you're probably going to be working this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Kim.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Sounds great. We're going to go to break, but before we do that, Helen and I were talking about March Madness, and Hooters is the place for all the basketball madness. You can grab 10 boneless wings and a Big Daddy beer for only $14.99. If you bring in a group and grab 15 boneless wings served in any of their world-famous sauces or dry rubs, along with a pitcher of beer, it's only $20.99. So what are you waiting for? Get your game on at Hooters. More info, check out my website, kimmunson.com. And we're going to go to break. We'll be right back because Greg Fulton is on the line. He is the president of the Colorado Motor Carriers Association. And as we talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom, there's a variety of different code words for force. And mandate is one of them. And down at the legislature, they are working on a biodiesel mandate. And Greg is going to explain what that means to you, what that means to the industry. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out my website, KimMunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And be sure and sign up for Helen Raleigh's and Dr. Paul Prentice's salon series on three punches to knock back, to knock down democratic socialism.
Make sure you don't get back up.
Yeah, that's right. So, but on the line with me is Greg Fulton, and Greg is the president of the Colorado Motor Carriers Association. And Greg, welcome to the show.
Kim, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Now, we talk about socialism is ultimately comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force it. And there are code words for force like require, registry, compliance. But mandate is one of the big force words there. And Senate Bill 38 this year is a biodiesel mandate. Why is this a bad deal?
Well, I think this has been like, you know, a well-intentioned effort by some actually to address, you know, emissions and climate change. You know, the problem with this is first off, let me note that, you know, when we look at other states, you know, in terms of where there's been mandates, there's only a limited handful that have it. No one other than Minnesota has a mandate over what we call this 5% of the blend. You know, we would have a 10% in 2 years and that. But the fact is, you know, we have no other state in the country that has zero production like we have of biodiesel. And we would end up having to rail or truck this in over 700 miles, which is a substantial cost. And there's going to be a great deal of emissions just getting it.
Right.
You know, and let me mention the other things that as we see happens with this. And one of the big concerns we'll tell you is, you know, biodiesel is acts kind of like as a solvent. And people think, well, gee, it's great. It's going to clean out things. You know, when you've got an older truck and engines out there, what that does is it loosens sort of that sludge and everything like this. And with trucks, especially heavy-duty trucks, those injectors and that, it's going to get into there, it's going to plug those. You know, those are about $3,000 a piece, actually, to replace. And you'll end up seeing more frequent change in the fuel filters. Some say you go through about three fuel filters, actually, in the first few months, actually, when they've had this, you know, higher blend of biodiesel. So, you know, we're worried about the repair and maintenance costs and the performance. You know, the thing that I think that happens here, too, is that biodiesel is somewhat unique in the sense that it's the only kind of emission reduction strategy where it reduces one form of emissions and actually increases another. So while we get some significant carbon reductions, we have nitrogen oxide, which is another pollutant that the state, you know, in terms of areas like the Denver area is, you know, in non-attainment, we would actually increase it, and we'd see it increase in probably over 1 million vehicles in the state net. And so we're going to either, then we're going to have to go and knock that down as well. So I think it's you know, some of the ideas, it's well-intentioned, but gosh, I mean, it's a challenge. And we would say in other states where you have a mandate, you find out they have the highest cost biodiesel when they have incentives out there where people can choose on there whether they use it or whether it works best for them. They have the lowest cost, actually, in terms of fuels that are blended with biodiesel. So,
but what a novel idea to let people choose to do something instead of forcing it. What a novel idea. Now, hey,
yes,
Craig, I want to just mention that people say, well, gosh, I don't know how that really affects me. And you know, there's the narrative, oh, this is going to help climate change. And so people go, well, they may not care. They should care. Because, you know, when you really take a look at it, I'm absolutely amazed when I'm driving through traffic and I see these truck drivers navigate traffic or going up to the mountains, you know, going over those mountains. And then you realize that this trucking industry moves our goods and services across the nation. And so when you go to the grocery store and you need something, I mean, I find it absolutely amazing that I can go to the grocery store when it's, you know, below freezing and I can buy bananas and apples and oranges. And I find it amazing. I think we take it for granted. I think we, in some ways, kind of take the trucking industry for granted.
Well, you know, I appreciate those thoughts because, I mean, it's a vital industry. I mean, we you know, essentially we always say that, you know, if you got it, it came by truck, actually, you know. And if the thing that happens with us here is that 75% of the communities in Colorado are solely served by truck. If they don't get trucks, they're not getting their goods or services. And when we look at this in the light of the biodiesel mandate, we're looking at anywhere between cost end of it going up around 15 to 30 cents per gallon of diesel. Of course, that'll be all diesel users, okay, in what we call this non-attainment area where about 3/4 of the people live actually within the state. And what we're looking at there is that's going to work its way into those goods and products and services that we all use. And that, I mean, it's a situation where we're going to have to pass it along. Now, one of the things we wonder is why, you know, when we look at strategies, we're supportive of actually, you know, reducing emissions. And we know there's a lot of different ones. We think there are some better ways to do this in terms of getting those emission reductions than actually having this higher blend mandate and in there. And I think it's a situation that we feel that, you know, there are ideas out there that could be implemented easier and at lesser cost and something that isn't going to affect actually a lot of our vehicles out there, the potential. I mean, we worry about some of the warranties on some of these vehicles. And this isn't just going to affect, and I think people need to realize, it doesn't only affect vehicles that are on, you know, in terms of on the highway like trucks. It's going to end up when you're looking at construction or agriculture within that area. I mean, it's going to end up, they will be getting that same blend, and they have a even somewhat more problematic type of situation with biodiesel at those higher blends.
So what is going to happen, Greg, ultimately, why everyday hardworking people should care, is that this mandate ultimately is going to make everyday life more expensive, and there will be less then for other things in their lives, and I think we do a good job regarding pollution. I mean, there's always good things, more things that we can do. But I think that we're doing a good job on that. And so to come in with this mandate and make the things that, you know, make our lives better, to make it more expensive, realize that that is like somebody coming in and taking more money out of your pocket. That is what this particular Senate bill is going to do. So now, what do you want people to do to get more information and to take some action?
Well, Kim, I think I sent you some information, and I would ask if you might put it on your website in a link. And where it is that we have a link where they can send an email and to legislators and ask them actually, you know, to point out what the problems are with this and ask them to oppose this. I mean, we've been trying to work with the sponsors, and I think, you know, there's still some hope to get some sort of a compromise or something that isn't as damaging. But, you know, we think it's important that the public weighs in. I don't think the public understands. I mean, the one thing is that I also look at is I'm saying, okay, when we're going to spend, you know, this additional money, you know, all of this money is going to go to out-of-state interests. I mean, this is literally we're taking millions and millions of dollars, you know, out of the Colorado economy, and we're going to put it into an out-of-state, you know, mega, you know, conglomerate,
biodiesel,
actually, in the biodiesel end of it, rather than investing in our own state, actually. So, I mean, these are those things I think we have to think about as we you know, look at public policy in terms from all those different angles. So, Kim, if what would work for you, we would love to have it. I know you have a lot of followers out there. I think it's easier, you know, if we could end up, if you'd be willing to do that.
You know, it might be tough to put it on the website. We'll do it on Facebook.
Okay.
And I'll talk to Zach and see if there's a way that we can do it on the website. We'll do that, but we need to be pretty nimble since this is going to happen on Monday. But I'll chat with him, and I bet we can do something on Facebook, and we'll get going with that. So, you know, let's continue to monitor this. Greg Fulton, I really appreciate you informing our listeners about this.
Well, and I would just say one last thing, Kim. One is the hearing is at 1:30 on Monday afternoon at the Capitol, and it's in room 107, which is in the basement. If anyone wants to come and let their voice be known or any concerns they have, you know, we would welcome it. We think that's an important thing. We think it's one of those items that's really kind of been running under the radar screen. And like I said, I think there's some people, you know, have some very well-intentioned people in terms of trying to kind of do this, the sponsors and all this. But unfortunately, I don't think they had maybe the full picture on this, at least from kind of, you know, the industry and the people who are the real users out there. But, Kim, thank you for your time today. And you have a great day,
Right? Thanks so much. And, Greg, just before you go, Patty just texted me. We do these great recaps that we have on our website of the show. And she said, we'll get it in there. So it will be tomorrow morning. Go to my KimMunson.com. It'll be in the show recap. And so we'll be able to do it that way. So great. That's good. So, Greg Fulton, keep us informed on this. It's great to have you on the show. And thank you so much.
Kim, thank you so much.
Okay. Jason McBride, I was thinking about you this morning. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just as bright and shiny as a brand new nickel.
Well, happy Friday. And I was thinking about this craziness in the market. I thought I saw that the futures were going to be down again this morning. Is that true, or am I having deja vu?
What? Well, the futures are down. We still have an hour until the actual market opens, so that the futures could change, and sometimes the futures are one way, and as soon as the market opens, it's different. But you're right. It looks like we're at least going to have a pretty tough opening on the market. Where we'll end up by the end of the day is always a question, Kim. But, yeah, the market's nervous going into the weekend. You know, what could happen with more cases of coronavirus. So I may be wrong, but I wouldn't be shocked if today's a little bit of a rough day with the market fearing worse news on Monday.
Okay. You know, but Jason, times like this, many times when it's scary, is there's great opportunity. And, you know, I think that people should sit down and realize that there's, you know, there can be opportunity. You know, we've talked this week about assessing your risk tolerance. And this, I think, is a great opportunity for people to reach out to you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management and sit down and take a look at the opportunities out there. Because when things are scary, there's just great opportunity, I think.
Well, that's true, Kim. They always say buy low and sell high, and it's very hard to do both of those things because it feels like the wrong thing to do. You know, it's a good time to take a look at your overall plan. I think most people would find that if they've got a long-term plan and updated with, you know, their current values, which may be down a little bit. It's probably not made a massive dent in the long-term outlook unless the original projections were far too rosy. But sometimes it's best to, you know, try to keep your cool. Kim, I've always said that, you know, I think it's okay to panic, but panic on purpose and panic quickly if you're going to do it. Don't wait until you've lost half your money and panic because of that. So I think there is an old saying on Wall Street. I don't know who said it, but it goes, he who panics first panics best.
Okay, we'll sit down and talk with you. And I just saw this come across the wire that in February, it looks like they put, had 225,000 new jobs, which I think that's pretty good.
273.
Are you? Okay. Well, yeah. That's pretty awesome. And so, yeah, we'll see how the market looks at that. So, Jason McBride, I'd highly recommend that people reach out to you at airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. Sit down with you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management for a discovery session, because even when things are out there look scary, there's great opportunity. So, Jason, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
All right, Kim. Talk to you Monday.
You betcha. And we're going to go to break. In studio with me is a woman who I have great regard for, and that is Helen Raleigh. She writes for The Federalist. She's an entrepreneur, grew up in China, and you've got two important pieces at The Federalist, Helen. I'm excited to talk about it.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, we'll go to break, and we'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And while you're there, you might want to sign up for our salon series, Three Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism, that will be presented by Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice. I am so excited. It's March 30th.
It's March 30th. Yes, it's part of the March Madness.
There's a lot of madness out there, but it's going to be a lot of fun over at Water's Edge Winery. Mm-hmm. And the tickets are $20. There's a processing fee. And then you'll pay for whatever you want to eat and drink over there. Jen, I know, is going to have some great beverages, and Chef D, some great food. And this will really be food for the brain as well. We need to be able to talk to our kids when they're coming home from school or home from college, and having professors that talk about socialism. You need to be able to talk to your kids about this.
Right, and then you need to know how to talk to them about it too, because, you know, given how after Super Tuesday, even though Bernie did not win, even though I should say Bernie did win some states, including our state, Colorado, and he got a big prize of California. So it's Bernie's still the front runner. And even if Bernie didn't win the Democratic nomination, he already successfully pulled the Democrat Party so left that what we consider moderated Democrats today are crazy socialists two decades ago.
It's astounding to me that we have media call these other people moderates. They are not moderates.
They're not moderates. Kim, I compare Bernie's socialism is going to be like a shock and awe, and everybody else's socialism is going to be a slow cooker. But they all lead us to the same disastrous outcome. So we need to be very vigilant. So we need to know, we need to recognize socialism as it is. Don't let anyone be fooled about any adjective such as a democratic socialism, as if it is something wonderful, beautiful, newer and gentler, different from what we have seen before. We need to recognize socialism as what it is and punch it back strategically, tactfully, but also forcefully.
Well, one of the things I would recommend for people to start with is this piece that you have at the Federalist. It's Bernie Sanders, Democratic Socialism is the same kind that destroyed Venezuela. And many, many years ago, I traveled with a song and dance group. I can't really sing very, yes. And they had kids from all over the world. And one of my very good friends was from Venezuela. And at the time, the country was very, very prosperous. He showed me pictures of Caracas. I mean, it was metropolitan. It was wealthy.
Yes.
And now people don't have food and toilet paper. So take us through this a little bit here, Helen Raleigh.
Right. So if we want to understand Sanders' democratic socialism, we have to look at another democratic socialist, which was Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez came into power in 1998. When he was running for president, if you compare Hugo Chavez's campaign promises, it's very similar to what we're hearing from Bernie Sanders now. Hugo Chavez said that he will never nationalize an industry. He blamed capitalism for ruining his country, which wasn't true, just like you said. Back then, when he was running for the president, Venezuela was one of the richest countries in Latin America, had the most vibrant democracy in Latin America. So, but still, Hugo Chavez blamed the capitalism, and he was going to implement socialism in Venezuela, and people voted for him because he's very, very charismatic, just like Bernie Sanders. He has this fabulous way of giving impassioned speech about how the poor, the working class are underrepresented in Venezuela, and he's going to change that. And so people voted for him. He won the election overwhelmingly. As soon as he became the president, he nationalized the key industry. He took the money that should have been used to maintain and develop those industries to fund his social welfare program. So if you look at the program he funded, almost everything that Bernie Sanders promised he's going to do, Medicare for all, free college for all, and low-income housing for all, everything that Bernie Sanders promised, Hugo Chavez did it. He implemented those. And Hugo Chavez used to say that the capitalism is a road to hell, but we just talk about Venezuelans today are living in hell, not because of capitalism, but because of the socialist policies that Hugo Chavez implemented and his successor, Nicolas Maduro, continued to maintain.
Well, and Helen, what happens with this rhetoric that we hear is it appeals to something that happens in all humans, and that can be envy. And when you feel envy or anything like that, You need to punch it down, because being right. envious of somebody else is not meaning that you it basically means that you want to shut down their success, that you want to take away their success. Instead of looking at somebody else and seeing that they have been successful, and you look at here in America, we talked about Madame C.J. Walker. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the early 1900s, she became a millionaire because she came up with an idea that people felt made their lives better. They liked the products for their hair. And so when you get to socialism, which is based on envy, then you have to use force to take other people's stuff. When you talk about nationalizing the industries, mm-hmm. what that means is the government came in and took that, right?
Right.
And we have a friend that her family grew up in China, and the government came in and just took everything. And I mean, it's astounding to me. But we're seeing it happen from policy here in Colorado. Just like when we had Greg Fulton on regarding mandates, they're trying to kind of take control of the trucking industry in a way. And then we also see that there's probably going to be something on the ballot based on envy that will give a income tax decrease to like 95% of the people in Colorado, but it's going to almost double the income tax for the quote-unquote wealthy. What do you think about that?
Well, that's just like I said, that Bernie Sanders has successfully pulled the Democratic Party way left. So even if he doesn't win the nomination, he has pulled the party so far left that all the policy we see from the left, it basically originated from the same thoughts and ideas. It will lead us to the same direct socialist disaster. It's just how fast they will do it. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important we recognize socialism as what it is. You know, come back to the Bernie Sanders, that he liked to, he never be embarrassed to call himself a socialist, but he always add a qualifier to say, oh, I'm a Democrat socialist. Uh-huh. So this is not your grandfather's, this is not a Soviet Union's type of socialist, right? This is something newer, gentler, much better. It's all about this warm and fuzzy feelings. And he liked to use the Nordic countries example. I mentioned in my article that he really used the Nordic a country in a very intellectually dishonest way. He only pointed to the Nordic countries' social welfare system, but he never talked about how the Nordic countries are able to fund, afford the social welfare system, you know, currently. For example, you know, Bernie Sanders only talked about the tax on the super rich, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked this up. If you add up all the wealth our American billionaire has, their total wealth add up together is $9 trillion. Okay. If you look at the total cost of a Bernie Sanders program, even based on the left-leaning think tank's estimate, so which is under, you know, lowballing, it's going to cost $33 trillion. So, you know, even if he took every last penny from the richest people in this country, it's not going to be enough to fund all the programs, you know, he wants to do. So he has going to reach down, and he
reach down to people
like you and I, and even down the economic ladder. So he's not being intellectually honest about that. And that's exactly what the Nordic country did. Nordic country tax the middle income, middle class, and the poor people to make sure everybody pay their fair share in order to afford this very expensive program. And also, Nordic country has only 10 million people. We're a country of 330 million people. And Nordic country actually loves the rich people. You know, in Nordic country, they don't have inheritance tax. You know, they don't have a property. They don't have inheritance tax, and they have a universal school of choice, and they have regulations.
They have school choice.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, they actually, even though they have a universal health care, but they also have a vibrant private health care that allow people to have the choice if they want to go find a doctor on their own. So those are the pro-capitalist policies enable a Nordic country to able to afford a social welfare program for 10 million people. And guess what? Even the Nordic countries now are rethinking if these expensive programs can continue because the influx of immigrants. So even the Nordic countries are rethinking that. And once again, Bernie Sanders and the Democrat Socialist parties are not honest when they talk about, when they put a Nordic country up as this example for this newer, better, gentler socialism. There is no such thing. And if you compare Bernie Sanders' policy to Hugo Chavez, what Hugo Chavez did in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez did everything Bernie Sanders wanted to do in Venezuela. And look at what happened in Venezuela now. It's a living hell. There's no food on the shelf. So yes, people have subsidized food, but they can't buy food because they're not on the shelf. Mm-hmm. They have subsidized energy, but they have rolling blackouts every day. You know, they have free health care, but there's no care. Venezuela has the highest, has higher infant mortality and maternal mortality rates than war-torn countries like Syria.
Wow. I would so encourage people to go to the Federalist. You can put in the Federalist, Helen Raleigh, and all of your pieces will come up. But this is such an important piece, the research that you have done, because I can tell you, when the kids come home from college, or you may be talking with neighbors or whatever, you need to be able to punch back, mm-hmm. punch down this narrative on democratic socialism. And this piece will really help people get their brains around it. And then, of course, have the fun evening when we're going to have our salon series on March 30th.
Right.
So highly, highly recommend to do that. Helen, let's go to break. When we come back, and there is another piece. Did you write both these this week?
Yes.
My hat's off to you. This other one is amazing as well. It says the coronavirus, and I just want to go back one thing. You know, everybody is so concerned about the coronavirus and what it's going to do to the economy. Bernie Sanders' policies are a coronavirus that we, you know, is underlying as well. And that's why, I mean, he's destroying things. And people are so concerned about what the coronavirus might destroy, but these policies would destroy stuff too, and we need to make sure that we know that. But this other piece is the coronavirus outbreak has given Beijing a new tool to suppress dissent. That wasn't the one.
No, that's the today's one. The one we talk about, the 8 valuable lessons about how to contain
right.
the coronavirus. Yes.
Oh, I thought, okay. You have been busy. So, okay, we're going to go to break. Helen Raleigh's in studio. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Check out my website, kimmunson.com. We always have our show recap there within the next 24 hours. It has all kinds of great information. In studio with me is Helen Raleigh. She immigrated from China, has really lived the American dream. And you are a fabulous writer.
Thank you.
And we talked about your piece at The Federalist on Bernie and socialism in Venezuela. There's another piece here that you have done just recently, and that is 8 Valuable Lessons from China about how to contain the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So let's go through those, Helen. Why did you write the piece, first of all?
Well, there's a lot of panic about coronavirus.
You think?
You know, me, I know.
No toilet paper in the
I know. We thought we were going to go to Venezuela. I had no toilet papers.
If you don't like the way that feels, then don't vote for Bernie Socialist or any of those other Democrats. Okay.
Exactly. Yes. So there's a lot of misinformation. And first of all, I have to give a disclaimer that I am not a doctor. I don't have a medical background. So this lesson is actually from, first 5 lessons are from a credible medical journal. Okay. So it was a paper published recently, co-authored by both American and the Chinese doctors, based on the over 70,000 cases that happened in China. And so it's a credible source. The paper is published by the a Journal of American Medical Medicine Association. So let's go through the lessons, given the interest of time. From this article, they mentioned several things. That the number one lesson is your age make a big difference. Again, this is all data based on the cases happening in China. So basically, based on this 70,000 cases, what they found is for children's 8, 9 or younger, the virus doesn't have a fatal impact so far, and there's no fatality rate for children 9 or younger, but for people who are older, especially if you're 79 and above, the fatality rate is about 14%. So it's much, much higher. So if you are older, if you're seniors, or if you have a senior at home, you have a senior neighbors, just watch the symptoms. Even if you just have normal flu-like symptom, it's probably good to get them checked out.
Okay.
And because the flu season is pretty bad this year too. Mm-hmm. As a senior, you're just more vulnerable for the virus. And the last two is if you have a pre-existing health condition, that's make you more vulnerable if you get infected by a virus. Again, this is based on the fatality rate. So I have some statistics there in my article, and you can check it out. Again, if you already have pre-existing health condition and you have flu-like symptoms or like the symptom that described by CDC that you suspect yourself has coronavirus, maybe you should just get tested.
Out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just checked out. But lesson three is the most important one, giving all the panic, is stay calm. Even if you have a coronavirus, it's not equal to a death sentence. So even though the numbers of deaths seems high, but if we look at the percentage, it's still lower than SARS, another infectious disease that we mm-hmm. experienced back in 2003. And also 80% of the confirmed coronavirus cases are considered mild, which means they're not pneumonia-like or they're very mild pneumonia. Even though it's true, there's currently no vaccination or medicine knows that can cure this. But if you experience a minor case and you're generally good health, and as long as you get treated, in time, it's very likely that you're gonna get out of it.
Okay.
And so there's really no, currently there's no fatality rate for people who are diagnosed as minor cases. And the minor 80% people, 80% of cases are minor.
And this is based in China?
This is all based on cases in China, because China has the majority of the infected cases.
Okay.
And lesson four is, we really should pay special attention to our healthcare workers, because based on the Chinese studies, that healthcare workers have a higher rate of getting infected and also pass away, you know, fatality rate. Because a caveat is, which I'll talk about in lesson eight, one of the caveats is about the healthcare worker getting more infected was because early on in China, Chinese government suppressed the news about the coronavirus. Okay. So healthcare workers did not know what they're dealing with. And also many patients who were infected did not know what they have. So there's like this the disease became communicable between the patient, unknown patient and unknown doctors. So there's a caveat for that. But still, we should pay attention, make sure our healthcare workers here in the United States have all the protective gears that they need, mm-hmm. and all the resources they need to, you know, because if they are unknowingly catch the disease and they treating other patients, they're going to become a carrier to pass this to other unknown patients as well.
And just to point on that, honest conversation between people and their government is really critical. And like you say, China suppressed that for quite some time, and then, you know, you see what happened with that.
Right. So yes, and that's the lesson eight I'm going to talk about, that, you know, freedom of expression and the freedom press are really the best.
I read that someplace.
Yeah. They're the best infected, but we'll get there. So hopefully, lesson five is a good personal hygiene and self-quarantine really helpful for minimizing the spread of the virus. Kim, you saw me this morning, came in, mm-hmm. I wiped all the mm-hmm. headset and the mm-hmm. microphones. And yesterday we heard from the governor that we discovered the first two cases in Colorado. Mm-hmm. At least one of them were somebody who traveled to Italy and then came here to Colorado. So I'm just saying, you know, if you know you traveled to places that had confirmed the corona case, even you feel healthy yourself, please just think about other people's, have self-quarantine yourself for 2 weeks and get yourself tested before you go travel and dealing with other people. Just have some consideration.
Just be responsible. Yeah,
just be a responsible citizen for others. And the lesson six is, you don't really have to wear a mask if you are healthy. Masks really should be reserved for people who are already sick, even just have flu, and also healthcare workers. So don't hoard a mask if you don't have to. There is one benefit, I have to say. Ever since I published an article, somebody emailed me that about it. There's one benefit that if you are healthy but you're still wearing a mask is to prevent yourself touching your face.
Oh.
Right. So because our hands are really dirty, no matter how many times we wash it. And the coronavirus really is highly contagious. If you touch some high touched surface area, mm-hmm. then you touch your nose, your mouth, you know, your faces. So when you wear a mask, even when you're healthy, that can prevent you from touch your face. So there is additional benefit to that.
Okay.
But still, don't hoard the mask if you don't have to.
I wish I would have bought a mask manufacturing stock before this whole thing started.
Like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't we all?
Where was Jason on that one?
Today. I wish too. And another disturbing thing from the Chinese experience is that being cured does not necessarily mean you are coronavirus free. What they discovered recently is about 14% of the patient in this one area, so they don't know if it's just for this one particular area, but they did a discovery in China in this one particular area, 14% of the patients who were confirmed that they were cured, then they get a test in the follow-up test again, it was found that they still have a coronavirus. So it's unclear why this still happening. It's also unclear why, whether they are contagious or not, after they've been cured, they still are carrier. So that's a big unknown. But the lesson eight is the biggest lesson of all, as I mentioned, that you know, Chinese people suffered the worst, right? Chinese people saw the highest number of infected cases and highest number of deaths. And free speech and the free press are really the best disinfectant to coronavirus. It's really essential.
How so?
Because in China, the first patient zero was discovered on December 1st. So there were several medical professionals actually starting circulating information on Chinese social media about these suspicious cases in late December. But the Chinese government suppressed them, and they were called one by one to the police office to tell them to stop spreading rumors. They had to sign confessions. So, and the Chinese government did not tell people about it at all. So people didn't find, so people went about their normal business and
without taking precautions,
and people didn't know about this until January 25th, which was about almost 2 months late. Right. And so when you suppress freedom of speech, freedom of free press, people suffer the worst. And we can see that even when since happening in other countries, right? South Korea has the second highest number of infected cases, but South Korea has way much lower number of that fatality rate than Iran and China. So Iran, even though it has the fifth number of infected cases, but Iran has a higher number of deaths. It's almost close to 9% than China. So countries who are more free, countries has more freedom and a freedom of expression, freedom of free press will better protect their people than authoritarian regime. Okay.
Well, Helen Rawley, thank you so much for being in studio. Thank you for these important pieces at The Federalist. Just go to The Federalist and put in Helen Rawley and take a look at those. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And our quote for today is from Madame C.J. Walker. She said, "If I have accomplished anything in life, it is because I have been willing to work hard." And so today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.